This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I hope everybody has a happy Thanksgiving this week. I'm one of your co-hosts, Aiden Reich, and I'm joined by my other co-host, Adam Murray. Adam, where are we headed for Thanksgiving?
I'm working Thanksgiving, and then the day after, I'm heading off to a concert. And I've already started putting up my Christmas village, so...
You're going to a concert for Thanksgiving?
The day after.
Oh, okay, Black Friday. So no shopping for you, not even your wife?
I've been done since October, actually.
My wife is big on it. Like, she even does doorbusters on Thanksgiving night.
Oh, yeah, you know, I used to, but there's no, with the world of free two-day shipping, I got everything done months ago, and I can just laugh at people who are still running around.
You know, I've done it before, and, you know, a lot of times I kind of, like, roll my eyes. It's like, this is so stupid. But there is a little kind of, like, weird, like, visceral excitement to it. Like, trying to rush in and get this. Because, like, you know, it's like a game plan. It's almost like, in the NBA when, you know, you have a big game and you think you have this great game plan. It's like, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. You know, it's kind of like when you try to map it out when you're shopping. Okay, you go here. We got to get this and we got to get that. It's almost like you have a mission to accomplish.
Well, is it because, like... You know, the past few years, you know, we're guaranteed to have it in stock for the first hour. It's like, well, that takes the, you know, it just show up and you'll get it.
Well, not just that, they've diverted it so that, you know, they can avoid the stampedes on Black Friday. So they've stretched it open on Thanksgiving so that, you know, people who want to get in there early for doorbusters can just do it before, instead of just doing it all on Black Friday where just everybody comes in one massive herd and people, you know, either get injured or, you know, pray not die, you know.
It's just beyond necessary. People just trampling people. How many, they give the same TVs out every year. How many times do you need a new TV?
Well, what's the best deal you ever got for Black Friday?
Best Black...
Or Cyber Monday, or, you know.
I just remember I got, you know, way back when I got my parents' surround sound for... Like, it was a $1,000 system for, like, $250.
I remember about 4 years ago or 5 years ago when it was kind of, when it just started kicking up as a retail item, my wife got a Blu-ray player from Walmart for, like, less than $100.
Yeah,
which at the time was a great
deal. And then the next year, oh, now it's $90 because, well, everybody already has their Blu-rays. And
yeah, I do remember at the Walmart that we were at near my parents' town, the Apple section, because they launched a new iPod last year, or the new iPad last year, and that Apple section is awful. And then I remember I went to the, I was passing through the mall about 2 months ago, and the Apple store looked like, you know, when you watch The Walking Dead and they have, like, the congregation of zombies at the gate. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, it's just...
I don't know what happened there, but I was like, thank God I don't have an Apple product.
And the Apple store, like, their deals are like $10 off. It's not even, like, I'll gladly pay $10 more and just ship it to me for free, 2 days. I'll get it on Wednesday, it's just as good.
Now, we're sitting here talking a lot about, you know, shopping and Thanksgiving and, you know, family festivals, whatever you want to call them in your household. So everybody who gets to enjoy the holidays while they kind of, you know, get their heaters started and, you know, try to get away from the cold weather. I hope you enjoy it. For Thanksgiving Day, there will be no NBA games. Now, I'm not sure how long that's been. I remember a couple of times that there were NBA games on Thanksgiving Day or Thanksgiving night, but none this year. A pretty loaded day on the Wednesday the 25th and Friday the 27th. We'll get to the schedule at the end of the episode. So there's a couple of interesting matchups, but we wanted to try to recap for the last week or so how everything's been going in the regular season. The Golden State Warriors are not too bad. Not too bad.
They're, you know, Luke Walton's the greatest coach of all time, apparently. You know, it's just, we said it last time, we'll say it again this time. They're just extremely hot, extremely healthy, and once Steph Curry starts missing his shots, I don't see Klay Thompson or really anyone else stepping up.
You know, that is a point I want to hit on right before we kind of get into our heavy topics that we were sort of exploring. What does Luke Walton's success in the beginning of the season say about the team or about coaching elite teams in general? Does it mean that the coaching is not as important as people would assume in the NBA in the regular season? Or does it say that, you know, having a new voice leading the team, it can only help you out that much more?
It just means teams are on autopilot. Just look at the Cleveland Cavaliers again, with a certain star player subbing himself out for no reason and then getting a technical foul. And
well, not just that. He was mad at David Blatt at late in that Bucks game because he thought he had called a timeout when they had numbers with seconds to go in the overtime. And for some reason, the referee thought Blatt wanted a timeout and called it, and LeBron was hopping. He was literally hopping mad on the court.
Yeah, and it's the players' league. If players are going to play for you, they can. If they're just going to ignore you, Walton is probably just more of an extra body on the practice court since he's, you know, still.
Well, they brought in Nash as a consultant, but he's not there on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, he's kind of sort of the guard whisperer for Curry, you know, with his, you know, given his relationship with Steve Kerr.
Yeah, so. Does coaching really do things? For certain teams, yes, you need coaching. For teams with hot hands, you just sort of ride it. And the coach, you know, can probably take, in that case, if they're overcoached, that could take them out of their rhythm.
Yeah, I think the situation, like you said, is unique for every team. I just think in this situation, the Golden State Warriors are just so fucking good, it doesn't matter. I think that's really what it comes down to. This is 96-97 Bulls type of dominance.
Yeah, and then, you know, you have the haters out with what was it, Rodman or Pippen saying, well, who cares if they win 72 again? They're still not as good as us because the NBA sucks now.
Ron Harper said that on Twitter.
Yeah, it's just like,
I didn't know Ron Harper had Twitter.
Like, thanks for coming in because you really contributed a lot to your, you know.
Well, you know, I remember I always talk about Open Court on NBA TV on this podcast because I just really enjoy it. And I remember that the topic I brought up where Isaiah Thomas was on the panel and they talked about him not being on the Dream Team. And one of the things that he mentions that I did not have a problem with Magic, Bird, or Michael making any comments about me not being on the team because they deserved it. He said, but for Scottie Pippen is to voice pipe in that he didn't want me on the team, for him being at a lower level than me, at least in his eyes, kind of irked him the wrong way. Do you feel like, you know, a guy like Ron Harper saying, you know, who wasn't the best player obviously on those Bulls teams, piping in and saying, oh, we would have beaten the Warriors, I mean, is there a certain level of like prominence for a player where if you were like a bit player on a team that was great before and you claim that this team could beat that team, that you basically need to shut your mouth?
It's not you can shut your mouth. It's like, don't take shots at, you know, break down James Michael McAdoo and the other benchwarmers who are, you know, your level. Don't, you know, Steph Curry is at his own elite level where it's just like, you know, just, you know, enjoy your victory. Don't feel the need to hate on everybody else.
Exactly. I feel the same exact way about that one. We were talking a little bit about coaching and having new voices come in and either help out a team or sometimes in some situations go south. Not necessarily trying to pick on Alvin Gentry for the New Orleans Pelicans, but that just has not gone well at all. They're 2-11, and it feels like in the Western Conference where you have a huge hole to dig out of that they've dug themselves a hole that they can't dig themselves out of.
Well, is it that just the coaching's bad, or just they just got injured off the bat and never
injuries,
got...
Injuries is number one, but I do feel like he has the wrong roster for what he's trying to do. I think that's another big part of it. And I think Anthony Davis got off to a slow start, and I think he's trying to force things. I think that's another part of it.
Well, here's a random... Is it the roster? Because this is the same roster they've had for, you know...
It's the same roster
three
that won
25
games last year, yeah.
It's the same roster as last year and the year before. They haven't... They've had two draft picks in the past, like, 5 years, and... They traded away Quincy Pondexter to get him back, so technically as a successful draft pick? I don't know, but you don't add any free agents. You don't add, you know, you know, we got Jimmer Fredette up, we cut him. You haven't added one real new piece to this team.
Well, they brought in Perkins, but, you know, Perkins has been, he got injured pretty quickly, right, when he got in. And they bring in Ish Smith, who's been replacing Drew Holiday. Now, Ish Smith is third in the, I think he's either third or fourth in the league in assists. But that's sort of one of those things, like, you know, one of the guys that's like one of the leading rookies, when we get to the rookies in a minute, is T.J. McConnell. But does that mean that T.J. McConnell's a good player, or is it just means that he just happens to be in a situation where he gets a lot of minutes on a team that's just, that is in desperate need at his position?
Who?
Exactly. Now, another one, now this is a coaching change that is a lot more recent than Alvin Gentry, who had gotten hired in the offseason, like, along with a lot of other coaches. But this one came in pretty fast and pretty swift, and that was B.J. Bickerstaff replacing his former head coach, Kevin McHale, who got fired by the Houston Rockets after a 4-7 start. That night after the firing of McHale, when Bickerstaff took over his first game, they won a pretty dramatic game with the Portland Trailblazers, where the Rockets were down big. Corey Brewer hit an off-balance three to tie the game, and then Harden went off in the overtime to win it. But and then they lost, and then they dropped the game after that. I believe it was actually against the Celtics that was the last game that McHale coached the Rockets against, right?
I believe it was either that one or just the one right after it, but it didn't. The Celtics did not help.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the Celtics pretty soon. But with the Rockets, you know, there was rumors of a players-only meeting about maybe a few days before that happened. McHale went off in a press conference where he was talking about how, you know, that players had to play harder. And when you feel like the players have lost the coach, there is a situation where you might have to make a change. But how surprising was this change?
I was surprised just how quick they just quit on him, mm-hmm. which is that's what they did. They just gave up, and, you know, Harden, you know, he's not doing himself any favors.
Well, how much of a leader is he, really, is what the question is. Now, Dwight Howard, being on a team that's in the middle of turmoil, that's like par for the course. He did it in Orlando. He was in L.A. for like 5 minutes, and he did it there. Got Mike Brown fired in like five or four games in back in 2012-13. And now we have the same situation here. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, Dwight was like one of the guys who wanted Kevin McHale to get the axe. Supposedly, McHale being such a great big man in his day and being able to tutor Kevin Garnett when he was in Minnesota was a big part of Dwight coming to Houston in the first place. So I'm not sure how much of an influence his coaching was on Dwight wanting him fired or anything like that. You know, it could be the opposite. But he's to a point where he can't even play back-to-backs anymore, Adam.
Yeah, that's just mileage just catches up with him. But, you know, like I mentioned with Harden, you know, there was, okay, obviously there was reports that, you know, people aren't liking his play style, and that's what I meant. He's not doing himself any favors because he's like, oh, well, this is my team, I'll take control, and
I'm saying is that Howard's not a leader. So
Howard never was. He's not a leader. He's
so it has to fall on the beard.
He gave it up. You know, it's really center missing sort of Josh Smith's leadership. Ty Lawson hasn't done anything, and it's just one of the – I'm not going to say he's part of anything, but Denver seems to be happier now that he's gone. All of a sudden he goes to Houston, and their situation gets a lot worse.
If the Rockets were in the Eastern Conference where you might be able to scratch out a 500 record and still make the playoffs, would Kevin McHale still have a job right now?
Probably not, because regardless of what conference you play in, it's, you know, people are saying still, it's too early in the season. It's only 14 games to get a good sample size. You need 20 or 25. So whoever they weren't losing to, they didn't play.
Well, they get to the easiest stretch of their schedule coming up. You know, they have a couple of games against the Pelicans. I hate to call them easy games, but the numbers say it, you know. and then they have a couple of home games in between against some easier teams compared to what they had to start off with, you know, with dropping they got one win off of the Clippers, which was a great win for them in LA, but you know, they lost to the Warriors. They just struggled from the gate. That Celtics loss was just ugly. They looked bad.
That's, you know, basically
the Nuggets loss was bad.
Basically, what it comes down to is they didn't play Golden State every night. They're not playing all these elite teams. They lost to Denver twice already. They had an overtime win against Orlando, and they lost to Brooklyn.
They barely beat Portland, and I don't really know how good Portland is.
So they're not beating, you know, they're losing to bad teams too. So you could say they're in the East, but you lose to Brooklyn. You lost to Brooklyn.
was that Brooklyn's first win of the season or their second?
I think it was their second.
It was their first?
I think that was their first, and Philly was their second.
All I know is that team, Brooklyn, I don't even want to talk about
it. Oh, wait, never
that.
Mind. They beat the Hawks. I'm sorry. I forgot about that.
I don't know how they did that either.
Well, the Hawks are – we'll get to this later, but the Hawks aren't what they seem either.
But the thing is with the Rockets is that they're going into an easier stretch of their season. Daryl Morey pushed the panic button a little earlier than people thought. He didn't wait till Christmas time or, you know, to the new year, where a lot of coaches get their pink slips if they struggle. It seems to me, if you sort of track the regular seasons from year to year, that's a lot of. It's right around Christmas time that you see some teams that kind of don't meet expectations, and a coach that's on the hot seat gets fired. But this one was really, really swift, and you know, a lot of people, you know, have. Give Morey a lot of credit for being, you know, the stat god, you know, in the NBA. He brought in analytics. Charles Barkley has gone back and forth with him, saying that analytics don't mean crap. But that's Chuck's opinion. But for Daryl, you know, do you think him being a numbers guy and looking at it and saying, well, we're at under 500 in a Western Conference where, you know, the Spurs are elite, the Warriors are close to unbeatable, the Clippers are struggling, but they're going to bounce back really early. Do you feel like that he felt like he looked at the numbers in terms of the standings and said, we've got to find a way to climb out of this?
I don't think from a numbers standpoint, you have your team, you have your numbers, you've built your roster. Firing, you know, your coach, who, considering you went to the finals a mere, you know, couple months ago, the conference finals.
What I'm trying to get at is this, was this an emotional decision?
I think it was more of the players are just like, look, we're done. This isn't going to work. Because I don't see why he would make the change now as opposed to just waiting a little bit. It just seems a little too early overall.
But is McHale just suddenly a bad coach? He got into the Western Conference Finals. He came back from a 3-1 deficit, which is very, very rare in the NBA. I mean, was he just suddenly a bad coach?
No, remember, he was in the hot seat like 2 years ago and they were struggling and mediocre and, mm-hmm. you know, they have a good run for him. It's just his style of play doesn't fit James Harden's I'll do what I want. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of just, you need to sort of bend to the team you have, kind of, but... You know, in the end, you have a known quitter on your team, you have a known cancer, and you have a known selfish player.
All in one?
All in one, and then you're like, oh man, I sure wish we had Josh Smith. That's just the most bizarre statement of all.
Well, you know, the weird thing about Josh Smith is that a lot of criticism came from the Clippers in that really great win that they had, or the great game that they had. I don't want to call it a win because it wasn't, against the Golden State Warriors on TNT. Because a lot of people felt like that when the Warriors have this like secret weapon, or not so secret anymore, where they go small, and they're small ball with Curry, Thompson, Iguodala, Barnes, and Draymond Green at the five is like, if you look at the plus minus, they absolutely bowl people over, and Doc would not get out of the DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin lineup, and Josh Smith was having a lot of success early in that game against the Warriors when the Clippers racked up a big lead, and they didn't put him in, you know. So I mean, maybe Josh Smith is that important. It's weird to say that because he was a cancer in Detroit, but maybe he is the kind of X factor, you know, as a small four and or big three that can really help people out, You think his absence has been that much of an effect on Houston?
I think it possibly could, because don't forget, he and Dwight Howard are best buddies, and now, you know, Dwight Howard.
He's also one of the leading leaders in assists on that team.
Yeah, he came in and it was just sort of the, I could be a good player, me and Detroit were a bad fit, which, you know, you could, how much can you really blame him considering the more recent Detroit history where you get the Ben Gordons and the Villanuevas? It's just a lot of bad fits seem to have gone up there for a while, so it could have just been that area and that time in history.
All right, and this is a good spot so we can launch our category here, where we talk about contenders and pretenders, which is sort of the crux of the episode. And what it is that, you know, Adam and I went through a long stretch of previewing a lot of the teams in packs of five, going from the lowest tier to the top tier. For all those people that were able to listen to those episodes before the season began, thank you very much, and I appreciate everybody who's listening to these future episodes. Anybody has any feedback, you can always hit me up on Twitter, or you can always send a written letter to Adam Murray's house.
Just send it Pony Express.
But with the previews that we did in the season, we had a couple of the ones that, as we look back on them, even after just 1 month in the regular season, do you think it's safe to say there's some of them that where we analyzed it and predicted it, and then we look back on it and say, that one might not stick. That one might go – that one should have been a little higher than we thought. That one should be a little lower than we thought. Do you see any of them right now? Like, I would hate to just give you just a rank and file of teams, and we'll just call them contenders, but because, like, the Warriors are easily, I mean, obviously, one of the best teams in the league, if not the best. The Cleveland Cavaliers look awesome. Have you ever gotten a chance to watch them?
No, I try to keep Cleveland and just all the hype. I try to wait till the latter part of the season for them, because I just, now for me, it's just watching. You know, I'm more fascinated with the Timberwolves and then the Orlandos, just the bad teams trying to, you know, get all the rookies, basically, before they hit that rookie wall.
Trying to scrap their way up.
Yeah, just to see, like, okay, who are these new players? Who are these new teams? Then it's like, okay, now it's February. Now the teams are going to make their push. Nobody cares about the shitty teams. So, okay, now I usually just go the reverse way and start off at the bottom and then work my way to the top.
Well, then let's meet in the middle then, you know, because I was just talking about the top teams. You're talking about the ones that were in the bottom on the way up. And we'll talk about some of the ones that have these kind of records that are a little little fascinating because it's so early in the year. You always have some teams with standings that are definitely not going to stand the test of time in terms of winning percentage. And then there are some that might give you a hint of something to come that we don't expect. But let me hit you one really fast. The New York Knicks at 8-6 right now. Contender or pretender?
Oh, they're definitely a pretender, but I mentioned they're not as bad as everybody thinks they're going to be.
Yeah, we had them at the very last.
Yeah, spot. That's where everybody had them, no, and that's where they're going to. I don't think they still have playoff. A lot of people have them in the playoffs, you know, area yet. But it's just nice to see that the team is growing and they're making smart decisions as opposed to their usual, let's just overpay for a broken down veteran. And Carmelo, like you had mentioned, oh, is he having a down year? Is he having that? But it's just, it seems like, no, he wants to be more of a facilitator, and he's been
scoring a lot more since that episode. I've noticed that. He had a big one against the Pelicans. He had a really good one against the Oklahoma City Thunder on the road. He's all of a sudden started to really score a bunch in the last week or so to kind of bring his average back up.
Yeah, now they're starting to know who, you know, there's so many. I mean, it was just literally him, and then everyone around him is completely different. He asked to see, you know, but let's wait till February when Brooke Lopez will be out with a concussion, and Aflalo will be, you know, having back problems, and Porzingis hits the rookie wall.
Which is eventual, but I mean, but we can't ruin the moment. You know, Kristaps Porzingis has been out of sight.
Yeah, he's been great. Another team that's been surprisingly mediocre is Charlotte.
Well, surprisingly mediocre as in better than expected, or...
Yes, as in I would have thought they would have been terrible. That roster looks terrible, and all of a sudden they're 7-6.
I think it's because their three-point shooting has gotten a lot better. You know, I think unlike Memphis and some other teams that just refuse to embrace it, I feel like the Charlotte Hornets decided, okay, we have a couple 3-point shooters here, some people like Frank Kaminsky, Spencer Hawes, Nick Batum. Let's take advantage of this, even if they're not completely embracing the three ball, but they've definitely improved in that department, and I think that's been a big part of what's made them successful with, like you said, not really the most talented roster.
No, but they definitely upgraded, getting rid of Gerald Henderson, finally, after all those years.
Well, Batum has played very well. I was very sketchy going into a contract year how he was going to play in Charlotte in a year where he could just take a year off and maybe gotten some money in the offseason. But he has played very, very well for Charlotte.
And that's he has fit in, and just, you know, we need to see what happens when Kid Gilchrist, if he comes back anytime soon.
Cody Zeller showing up a bit more. Marvin Williams becoming a close to an elite rebounder all of a sudden.
Well, I think he sort of realized he's no longer going to be that scoring option ever.
Yeah, he sort of embraced it and said, okay, I'm a rebounder. This is what I'm going to do. Al Jefferson, not going quietly into that good night yet, because I had talked about how I think his knees and his feet might fail him, you know, physically.
Yeah, and they're going to come March. He's, I don't see his minutes being limited at this point, so we're sort of just waiting for that moment now.
Yeah, he's gobbled up some big games, particularly, I think he had one against the Mavericks early in the year where he had like 31 points. You know, he's been really good. Kemba Walker, Jeremy Lamb, after that contract extension they got, which I dogged him for, because I really don't think he's at that level being even a $7 million a year guy. He's actually played pretty well coming off of signing that extension. Maybe it's because he's playing alongside his former UConn national championship bud, Kemba Walker. Do you think there's something to that?
I don't know. When you're rookies, yes, you have that. That's nice to have sort of that familiarity, but they're four-year pros, and they've moved on, I believe.
Let me give you another one. The Denver Nuggets. You know, if you look at their... if you look at the team itself and when the games that they lose, I mean, they look rotten in the games that they lose. You know, Moutier turns the ball over a ton. Kenneth Faried is sort of in and out sometimes, even though he, in the games where he plays well, he's fierce, you know, with the double-doubles. But they sit there at 6-7, which is a better record than Minnesota. It's a better record than Houston. It's a better record than Portland. Would you even consider them a contender right now in the West, or do you think that's definitely going to fall down?
No, they're going to fall down, but that's just the sign of a young team, is when you're bad, you're really bad. But remember how, like, terrible they were last year? And Gallinari, I thought he was sort of done with all his injuries, but he came back really strong.
Yeah, I think shooting never goes away. You know, so he doesn't. His knee got shot. You know, his knees are done pretty much, but he's still got a little bit of that hop step, and he's a really good 3-point shooter. I think that's been really helping him out a lot. Moutier is just a good point guard. He's a good NBA caliber point guard. You know, he struggles at times, but he looks like an NBA point guard.
Well, that's basically what it comes down to, is he's a rookie, so he's going to have games where he has 10 turnovers. He's still learning. This is the first time he's seen all of these teams. So you watch tape. Well, that means nothing if you've never seen the person in real life.
Yeah, Mike Malone also a steady improvement over Brian Shaw. You can tell on the court that they actually know what they're doing. You know, they actually have a game plan. With Brian Shaw, it looked like they wanted to do one thing and Brian Shaw wanted them to do something totally different. It
was, and just, you know, the absence of Ty Lawson. Mm-hmm. And another surprising team, Dallas.
Well, I'm wondering how long they can make that last. I almost get a Phoenix Suns for the last two seasons vibe out of Dallas, where they're holding on tight, they're overachieving with people like Zaza Pachulia, who's having a really good year rebounding the ball. Justin Anderson is getting starters minutes as a rookie. Dirk Nowitzki has every now and then. I think he had one against Boston where he just kind of lights it up and has a good game. And Raymond Felton hasn't completely imploded yet, even though his belly might. but yeah, they're right there in the thick of it at 9-4. That's actually a better record than Phoenix and Oklahoma City. It's third in the West as we speak right now, but I have a feeling that's gonna fall a little bit backwards, but I think the key here is to get off, and this is what Rick Carlisle, I think, was trying to accomplish. He just wanted to get off to a good start with this team. And they were able to do that so that they could just keep themselves in the conversation. Because if they were a team like, say, Houston right now, where they were not in the conversation, and then we get into the regular season, like deep into it in the new year, then Dallas would have been in trouble. But this is a good sign for Dallas. But I think they're kind of – I think they're going to – by definition, I would call them a pretender.
Oh yeah, they've had a little cake schedule, but even with the cake schedule, I wouldn't have been surprised if they were still 5-9 or something like Portland is.
Let's head to the East for a second. You talked about the Atlanta Hawks. I say they're still a really good team, but what are your reservations?
I stand full force in the pretender category.
Oh, why is that?
They're already 9-6, which is a big fall from last year.
Well, they struggled in November last year and then got red hot in December and January.
They got red hot. However, if you looked at their schedule, it was they beat the Pelicans twice. They beat I think the Nets and the Knicks and they had a really cake schedule thus far and. Mm-hmm. The fact that they haven't replaced, they didn't bother replacing Carroll and just they're going with Kent Bazemore as sort of their de facto replacement. Carroll, I just don't see him. I don't see him in the long haul doing. See them just fading fast.
Their wins, the Knicks, the Hornets twice. They won in Miami against the Heat. The Nets at New Orleans against the Pelicans. They beat the Wizards at home. They beat the Pelicans once again. Then they won at Brooklyn and the Kings. Their losses are against the Cavaliers, the Jazz, the Celtics, the T-Wolves, in a game where they almost came back from a 34-point deficit. And then they lost the first game of the season at home to the Pistons. So it seems to me like they've beaten a couple of good teams, mostly bad teams, and then when they play the very good teams that they lose.
Yeah, and that's sort of not the upper echelon we're sort of looking for.
Yeah. I watched them play Cleveland at the Q, and LeBron looks awesome. I mean, I don't know what the motivation is there. Maybe it's because of Kyrie Irving's absence, but it just feels like LeBron wants to stay in that MVP discussion like proactively, like because it was almost like in this game alongside Kevin Love, who's looked really 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 good too, coming off of that injury and the new contract. That, you know, it's just clear to me, Adam, that the story is the same as it was back in May. Cleveland is just better than Atlanta. They're just better.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, here's a question then for you, this thing in the East. Where are you on Toronto now? You buying into this new defensive system?
Can I write a rain check on that?
You know, they're 8-6.
Their West Coast trip was beyond a struggle. You know, they lost to the Sacramento Kings, I believe, in one of those games. They lost one to the Utah Jazz. Now, did you see DeMar DeRozan's dunk on Rudy Gobert?
Yes.
That's a Vine one. That's a Vine. When we talk about the really good dunks, I always say that's a Vine, and that was one of them. But they still lost that game. You know, they lost to the Warriors. That's three in a row that they had right there on the West Coast, and they're not done yet. They still they bounce back with that win against the Lakers, but then they have to go back and play the Clippers on the on Sunday. So, you know, they still got a little bit of a stretch to go. They get a homestand early in December for six straight games. But the problem with Toronto is that DeRozan is the guy, but there are days where Kyle Lowry is the guy. You know, and I feel like it's trading off every now and then where – if DeRozan struggles, then Lowry tries to take over the game, and that there's this kind of push and pull act going on. And then Valanciunas breaking his finger, and he's not going to have surgery, so he's not going to probably miss any time. He's going to try to rehab it on his own. But, you know, Valanciunas being out didn't really help him much either.
Yeah, they do have a little tough road ahead of them now with that happening. But still, you were very down on them in the previews, and...
Yeah, it's a thing where the consensus was that they were going to be good, and I was kind of the naysayer saying they were going to be bad, and now they're kind of like speaking to both sides of the pulpit. You know, they've looked good when they have to look good, and then the moment you kind of like you kind of put your the moment you put the your chips in, they all of a sudden they drop a couple of games in a row. So it's typical Raptors. You know, the Wizards are doing the same thing. You know, they'll look good a couple of, for like about two or three games, and then they'll look awful for a game where they can't score, and then they'll win two or three games in a row. And it feels like those two teams have been just in the same like system, you know, in terms of trying to move up in the NBA ladder. It feels like they've been in the same spot for two or three seasons, and they just can't get themselves out of it.
Yeah, but at least they're trying this time, as opposed to just we have the same team, let's keep doing it, sort of like we've seen with Memphis, and to a lesser extent New Orleans.
Now, if we had done this episode 2 weeks ago, we would have definitely been calling Memphis a pretender, but they bounced back really, 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 really strong. I can't say it was just because of the Mario Chalmers trade, but Mario Chalmers had the game of a lifetime not that long ago, where they had the throwbacks from the Memphis Sounds in the ABA, which were really nice jerseys. And Chalmers in the that night had 29 points. I can't even remember who it was against, but he looked really, really good. Do you think that move alone kind of helped them out?
Well, yeah, because he's the only person who's shooting threes in that team, really. And it's sometimes you just need a little energy guy who comes in, some different, because, again, it's just been the basic same guys year in, year out, and now you're bringing somebody new in and from another winning culture. If they traded with, like, Philly and brought, like, you know, Sauce Castillo or, you know, some other shooter from somewhere else, like, okay. But, you know, you bring in a winning guy with a winning attitude – it could mean a world of difference.
Here's an interesting one, and I'll bounce it back to you with a local one right after this. But let's start with this one: the Milwaukee Bucks, not playing great. Are they a contender or a pretender?
Oh, they're a pretender. Everyone thought they'd be with the addition of Monroe. They'd be, you know, in the elite, but they were just a young team before, and now they're a young team with a new part who doesn't really fit.
You know what's worse than a young team that's growing together? A young team that's losing while growing together.
Well, they've been used to losing. It's just...
That's what Orlando did, and now it seems like the Bucks are sort of hitting that after the winning had already came for them.
Well,
it's weird.
You have Jabari Parker you have to move back into the mix. You have O.J. Mayo, who's returned. You have Greg Monroe, who they didn't run anything sort of close to what he does last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you had times where Giannis was playing the five, you had times where he was playing the one. So
yeah.
To have a straight, this is our big man, we need to sort of have a set system now, it's growing pains for them.
Yeah, Giannis had a career high on that TNT game on Thursday against the Cavs, but they still lost the game pretty easily. Parker has looked good. You know, he does look like he's a little out of shape still, you know, trying to get himself back in with that with the rehab from the knee injury, but he looks really, really good. I do not know what's going on with O.J. Mayo's hair, but it's incredible. You know, it's like he's got a Sideshow Bob thing going on, if you've noticed.
Yeah.
It's almost like dreads. It's like dread Sideshow Bob. You know, not like Robin Lopez, but man, it's like Alfred Payton. It is growing. So I mean that's the only thing I know about O.J. Mayo this season. Jared Bayless has played well in the minutes that he's been given, but
well, that's the problem. If he's playing well, then you're really reaching far down the bench for him, because
and maybe they miss Ersan Ilyasova. I can't believe I'm even saying that, but maybe it's possible.
Well, he was just the quintessential stretch four, and
yeah,
you know,
and Patchouli in the paint, who's having a good year with the Dallas Mavericks. You know, they made a couple of moves so that they could get in Monroe, and he's had some good, you know, stat stuffer type of performances. But yeah, you got to worry a little bit about what we've seen out of the Bucks. Now, I want to move on to the Celtics. We talked about them a little bit. You're more of an expert on that side than I would be, or most of the casual NBA fans would be. Because even though they've played well, they sit right now at 7-5, firmly in terms of like the playoff standings. If you really had to come down to that, they're not really the sexiest team. They don't have like a lot, they don't like have superstar players. You know, Brad Stevens is a good coach, but I don't think people are flocking to the TD Garden to watch Brad Stevens coach a game. But what's going on with the Celtics here? Because I would consider them a contender, but only like a quasi contender. Like, I think they're the kind of team that could probably sneak into the playoffs and win a couple of games in the playoffs in the first round, but I don't consider them a threat to actually, you know, be a contender to win the conference. But what have you seen out of the Celtics that has been encouraging?
They're another young team who they blew a horrible lead at Dallas to Dallas. Mm-hmm. And just squander that game away. And that's what happens with young teams is you don't know how to play with leads. Yeah, you could sort of battle yourself back, but you don't know how to maintain, you know, like the Clippers. Okay, we're up 20. Let's hold this. Let's sort of play prevent. And then, oh, we blew it. They don't know how to do that yet, but it's just fun watching this extremely young team playing for this extremely young coach. And like you said, it's not sexy. Every time, you know, Kelly Olynyk has the ball, it's just like, no, I don't want to see him shoot six threes a game.
Now, I'm not saying the players aren't sexy.
The players, the style of play.
Now, Kelly Olynyk, yeah, not. But the thing is, like, you look at Jared Sullinger, and it's like, yeah, he's nice, but he's definitely got a couple of physical limitations. You look at Olynyk, and it's like, yeah, he's really, really skinny. And then you watch Marcus Smart, and you're like, man, he's kind of short. But when they play together, they play really, really fluidly. And Jay Crowder is, you know, he still leads the league in steals. Isaiah Thomas is just a bowling ball. You got to watch out with him because he'll score in a hurry on you. Amir Johnson has rebounded well for them. David Lee, I haven't really seen much of him. But Stevens is a real good tactician. He knows when to insert these guys at just the right time. I've even seen James Young pop in a couple of times. You know,
I haven't seen much of Young. He's the funny thing is people are making fun of him because your boy, was it Terry Rozier, is taking his shots up in the D League.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, he's not, you know, because that used to be like, oh, he would score 40 points and, you know, hit all these threes. Now he's not even getting his shots off in Maine. So,
yeah,
it's not a good look for your boy there.
But the thing is, the fact that they can send people like Young and Rozier and Jordan Mickey down there shows that even though they're not the most talented team, they do have a lot of depth. They're able to throw a lot of different lineups at you.
Well, that's the thing. We have a lot of depth. Marcus Smart goes out with a foot injury and, you know, or a hand or whatever. And then, but the team is still as tenacious as it was. And then, like you said, there's no, you know, Sullinger might do great one game and then somebody else might do great another game. And it's just one of those things where there's no superstar, but nobody wants to be the superstar.
Are they a defensively minded team, or do you think that the offense with the passing and the high assist mark has still been a benchmark for their offense?
Their defense is much better this year.
That's what Brad was known for at Butler. They were a physical, nasty defensive team.
Well, the thing about Butler is, you know, don't forget, is they're not a recruiting hotbed. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they got anywhere is pure overachievement.
I have on my Kindle, I have a book that I bought years ago about Butler's rise. It was called Underdogs, with DAWGS at the end for underdogs, and it's about Brad Stevens and the Butler Bulldogs and their two seasons where they got to the championship game. It's really, really fascinating when you look at the recruitment of guys like Gordon Hayward or Shelvin Mack and how they kind of had to slip through the cracks or either get early commitments before they had their growth spurts and people started recruiting them, or they were just forgotten players, you know. So, and do you feel the same way about the Celtics, that these are forgotten players, or do you think that he's just been able to find the right players at the right times?
He's just been able to find sort of the right mix of units. And like you had mentioned, they're fourth in assists so far, then they're sixth in points allowed. Mm-hmm. And like I think the other day they had 51 made shots with 39 assists.
I would bet their pace is a little slower than it was last season, but I mean I don't have that number in front
points
of me.
Points per game is sixth.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the pace, like the amount of possessions that they take in order to score those points.
Oh, you know?
But what I'm saying is that Stevens is really good at pushing tempo because he can kind of make the stats work and cook them up in any way he can, because he himself was sort of a stat nut, advanced stat nut when he was at Butler. So he's got this way of like speeding up certain games against certain teams. He's almost like a Popovich type. He's able to take his team and mold them based on whatever matchup he's facing off against. So if you're facing off against LeBron and a Cavaliers team that is potent on offense, but they play a little slower, maybe you want to speed up the game and so that you could try to get them into a run game that they're not familiar with. And if you're playing the Golden State Warriors, he probably has the pieces in place to slow them down, because you can't speed – if you speed up the Warriors, you're basically – you're basically getting burnt. But I just think that Stevens is just smarter than the average coach.
Well, as, you know, sort of just to tie the beginning to a little callback here, you have players who want to play for a coach. They're playing really well. You have players who quit on the coach. The coach is gone.
Yeah. Do you think the youth of Stevens has been a bit of a help there?
That he's more relatable to the players? No, I don't really think that. I think it's just more of, you look at the people he sort of brought in. Like, you have Jay Crowder. You know, he's bringing in high IQ people. He's the difference between we're going to have talent and then hope they turn it around, as opposed to let's bring in smart people. It's plus the proven success at Butler also helps, as opposed to who are you? You know, oh, you're just another retread coach. Okay, you've been in five teams and you've made some playoff years. You've made some lottery years. Okay.
I'll give you one team that we had dead in the middle of the NBA standings, and they've definitely played better than I thought, and so we'll do this last one for the contender pretender to finish it off. The Phoenix Suns. Braden Knight and Eric Bledsoe together have been wildly successful, to my surprise.
Yeah, but have they really been different than Dragic?
Yeah, but with the contracts, they're not trading these two.
Again, it's the same. You just had two players who were similar. They're playing the same thing. The team is horribly, I think, mismatched, because their style of play doesn't work with Tyson Chandler and Alex Len, who...
Yeah, but noticed, Chandler's been a good leader for them, though.
He's been a leader, but his minutes have been sort of cut down, and Alex Len doesn't have minutes. They've sort of had to go to small ball, so it's like, well, you have all these pieces that aren't really fitting.
Yeah.
And you
traded Markieff, so you have to rely on... Or you traded Marcus, so you have to rely more on Markieff to do that, to put the load in on, you know, inside.
Yeah, and he's not, you know, so it's just they're relying on those two the same way Portland is relying on McCollum and Lillard.
I think that's a byproduct of good drafting. I think they did a decent job. You know, even though Alex Len's not a great player, you know, they got him in the lottery, and a lot of people criticized it in 2013. That was a weak draft anyway, but they were able to get production out of him. TJ Warren has played well. I've seen Devin Booker pop in every now and then. They've got enough pieces in place where they can at least keep games going, and then they can rely on Knight and Bledsoe to sort of carry the way at the end.
Yeah, but I think sort of now, like, they're middle of the pack. That's where they're going to end up. They're just going to always be that perennial Milwaukee Bucks team from five years ago.
So they're neither contenders nor pretenders.
Sort of New Orleans, you're the 8-9 seed every year. You can't get a good pick because you're not terrible, but you're not good enough. You can't make the playoffs.
I'll say this for the Pelicans this year. I think they're pretenders in reverse. Like, I don't think they're a bad team. Like, if you look at the records, like, the teams next to them are Philly, the Lakers, and the Nets, and the other one that's kind of down in the pits right now is the Sacramento Kings. I think the Pelicans are better than all those teams. You know what I'm saying?
Well, of course you'd say that.
I mean, I'll spend every episode of this show trying to defend it, but I just don't think – I think they're pretenders in that they're not they're not a bad team, okay? Now, the other teams in the bottom, like, I look at their records, and I think they're all bad teams. I think the Lakers are garbage. The Sixers are – I don't know when they're going to win a game. I'm going to try to find their schedule coming up in the next few games, but do you see any wins in the next week?
Oh, they're going to have to at some point.
But will it be before the end of November?
If they play the Lakers or Brooklyn, there's a decent chance.
They play they almost beat the Heat on Saturday, okay? But they're still in the middle of a long road trip. They got four more road games in a row. They go to Minnesota to play the Timberwolves.
They can win that.
They played the Celtics on the road on the 25th.
They can beat Minnesota.
What about the Celtics?
The Celtics should win easily.
The Rockets. That'd be interesting if they lost that game. Then it would be a cataclysm.
Hey,
they might have to fire Bickerstaff. And then the Grizzlies.
I'm sticking with Minnesota. Because as much as we love Minnesota, I just, I see Garnett and Tayshaun Prince on the court, and it's just like, keep saying, why?
They're wildly inconsistent in terms of quality of play. They'll have quarters where they look great, and then they'll have a quarter where they look like the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Exactly.
I mean, but, that's actually a good transition, because I just want to kind of hit this up. Rookie of the Year race is something that not a lot of people talk about. There are some seasons where they don't talk about Rookie of the Year at all because the crop is just simply not that great, and there's really no, like, sexiness to it, like we were just talking about, where, like, the appeal or the buzz. But there does seem to be a little bit of buzz here about Rookie of the Year already 1 month in. What do you think is the source of that?
Well, because all these teams are relying on their rookies and their think about it. The two biggest TV markets have two rookies. So, of course, you're going to have a little more rookie talk than usual.
Well, you're alluding to Kristaps Porzingis in New York. Now, he only averages 26 minutes a game, but he's averaging 13 points, almost 9 rebounds, which is second amongst rookies, and he's averaging well over a block. What do you think has been the one thing that has made him stand out more than just the jump shooting and the putback dunk highlights? Do you think it's more than that? Do you think it's the fact that he can play defense, that he can rebound, that he's enough of a solid all-around player that he can play more than half of the games?
Well, to us, we had already known that because he was one of the better EuroLeague players. So I don't see why he'd be like, well, he doesn't know how to play basketball. He could,
because there's been a lot of EuroLeague players that come in and they don't do much at all.
Yeah, but they weren't even, like, Skeetishvili was playing 10 minutes on his EuroLeague team. You'll see, like, EuroLeague
Marco
players.
Milicic, yeah.
Yeah, they're just being buried at the end of the bench because their coaches, their handlers like, look, don't play him. He's a hidden gem. Whereas Porzingis was already dominating there. So it comes as no surprise.
What's your raw scout report on Porzingis? Because I know you've seen some of the highlights, like most people have nationally. What do you think of him? Like, what do you see? Like, Arvydas Sabonis, kind of?
I would say more of a Vlade, because he can pass.
He's more athletic than Vlade, though. Vlade was flat-footed. And Vlade was a better passer.
He's like Vlade and Dirk. In the middle, like, how do you bridge A to B? Sort of like O.J. Mayo's hair. Okay, you go from Peyton to Lopez. That's who your link is. And then sort of that way, like, if you have, the IQ of Vlade and the...
He does have great timing. That's what I think these putbacks are all about.
Yeah.
They're spectacular because he did it twice. He did it once to LaMarcus Aldridge, and then he had a really big one against, I think it was over Valanciunas with the Raptors. But he does have really good timing on the court. He seems, and if he had hit that shot with the Hornets, the buzzer had just hit right as he let it go. If that had actually gone in, we would have had Linsanity the sequel, pretty much.
Well, his jerseys are sold out. They're waiting for a new shipment, so it's starting again.
That's number 6, right?
Yes.
Okay. It's an interesting number. I know LeBron wore it in Miami, but...
Well, the thing with the low numbers, they've already been all retired in most teams.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny with the Knicks, because they're one of the most storied franchises in the history of the NBA, You'd have thought that a number like that would have been retired by now. Am I totally forgetting that Bill Russell wore it? Am I doing that right now?
For...
The Celtics. He wore number 6, right?
He was 5.
He was 5? No, yes. That was Garnett, huh?
Well... That they didn't play at the same time.
Yeah, but they retired Russell's number. I think he wore number 6.
Oh, Bill Russell. I was thinking of Bill Walton. I am...
But you know what? That is true.
Russell's been retired. Bill Walton was 5.
I'd have thought the Celtics would have retired Walton's number just for that 1 year. As crazy as that sounds.
For his towel-waving skills?
Well, dude, in 86, he was their 6th man, and he was the greatest 6th man in the history of the NBA for 1 year.
Oh, no, they're going to retire.
It was like having an NBA Hall of Fame All-Star off the bench. It was impossible to duplicate.
They're going to retire Garnett. Wow, I can't believe I got Bill Russell and Bill Walton.
Well, no, I didn't say it. I didn't, say it that fluidly. The other ones that are kind of big, like Porzingis is more of a stretch. But with the other bigs, these are true bigs, and that's Jahlil Okafor and Karl Anthony Towns. I think a lot of people had safe money anyway that they were going to be successful for their rookies. Jahlil, because he was a good player, he was a true center, and Philly really needed one anyway because of Embiid not being able to play. And then Karl Anthony Towns, I think that was kind of a surprise on my side because I felt like even though I thought he was a really nice all-around player at Kentucky, especially on defense, that it was going to take him a while to sort of break through. But man, it did not take long at all for Towns.
Well, I think with Towns, it's sort of the right place at the right time. When you have your personal coach in Kevin Garnett, who you see, he's sort of modeling his game after now. He's developing that little that shot, the little jumper.
Yeah.
Yep. Which I didn't really see that in Kentucky too
you know
much.
What he also has this running hook shot where he just kind of bowls over. And if somebody tries to, what I notice is that they don't try to stay stationary to draw a charge. Karl Anthony Towns will attack the basket, and he will loft the ball up in the air to just try to rattle it home. And it's a pretty efficient move. You know, he does that little swim move, and he just gets both of his big hands up there, and he says, "Okay, I'm going in." And it's working for him well. Defensively, he's one of the league leaders in blocks. He averages 2.4 blocks a game.
Yep, and sort of on the flip side, you know, because I knew we sort of knew Towns would be good, especially with that special attention he's had. Okafor hasn't been dominating as we sort of thought he should be.
Well, he's third amongst rookies in rebounding, but, I mean, it's not great. You know, I mean, Russell Westbrook averages more rebounds than Jahlil Okafor. You know, his block shots is okay, 1.6. If you're over 1.5 blocks per game, that means you're a fairly effective shot blocker on the court. Scoring-wise, he's great. I mean, I got to tell you, he's great, you know.
He's great, but I don't want to say he seems to be holding back or what something, but it's just I'm sort of expecting a DeMarcus Cousins, like, this is my team, there's nobody that can stop me.
No,
I'm going to go score 30.
I saw him at Duke, and he was fairly passive. Like, I kind of had a feeling that would happen to him, where he would play well in spurts. He'd be an efficient scorer in the paint, but he wasn't going to be a leader type that would kind of, like, that would sort of, like, galvanize the team. I did not see that with Okafor at all. You know, whereas with Towns, I don't think Towns is the leader of the team. I think the veterans are the leaders of that team, maybe Wiggins. But with Towns, he's a guy that he is not afraid to make plays. He had a game-saving block against Orlando. They lost the game in overtime anyway because Evan Fournier, who's been a complete shock this year, hit a game-winning three. But Towns blocked the shot that forced the overtime. He's a playmaker. You know, he's a better playmaker than Okafor is.
Yeah, and I still said, you know, Towns should be – he's up there for Rookie of the Year. Moutier, we've already mentioned.
Yeah.
And also,
Moutier averages over a steal per game, which is not bad.
He's active. There's steals. He's have rebounds, assists.
Averages 30 minutes a game, which is the only guy that averages more minutes per game than him is Okafor.
He's been filling up the stat sheet, which is all you can hope for.
What about D'Angelo Russell at 10 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal? There was a little bit of criticism there where Kobe was, you know, didn't want Russell to get so many minutes because he felt like he wasn't ready and that Jordan Clarkson needed more of those minutes. Do you think that he's just in a tough position where, you know, he might not be in a position to play, but they need him to play so he can get experience?
I don't know what is sort of going on with that team. I don't know whether his stats are down because you have black holes in the Lou Williams, Nick Young, Kobe Bryant world where you're not going to get assists. And
that team is a freaking mess.
They're missing all their shots too, and you know, you're all taking 14 shots to get 14 points. And
yeah, we talked about enough about the Lakers like a week or so ago.
Yeah, but from what I've seen of him, I'm still not impressed. He's still a combo guard who, like, well, we want you to sort of be a point guard. Well, he's not.
Now, continue.
You have Jordan, like you said, Jordan Clarkson is taking a bulk of your minutes, and you have to defer to literally everyone on your team, even people who don't deserve it. He's in a tough place.
A team that I was down on in the previews, and we didn't talk about in Contenders Pretenders because we would both agree that they're definitely contenders, and that's Miami. Justice Winslow doesn't start at small forward, but he averages 28 minutes a game, and he almost averages 5 rebounds at the small forward spot. I've seen him in big-time crunch-time moments for Miami. What is his advantage as a player for Miami? What makes him such a cerebral player?
Well, for one, I would just like to say I was high on Miami when you weren't.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
And we had mentioned a couple weeks ago, I had said Luol Deng is now expendable, and there'll be some team who might pick him up the deadline because he's still functional, he's still good.
Yeah, he's not bad. He starts the games, but
he can put a mediocre team sort of over the hump into the playoffs at the 8th seed. But he has a high IQ, and then you're playing with all-star players who know what they're doing.
Yeah, Bosch, Wade. Goran Dragic has played pretty well.
He's played well, but nothing special.
Even Tyler Johnson hasn't played that poorly. Did you see that movie put on Marcelo Huertas?
No, I did not, but...
He put an... Poor Marcelo Huertas, we know him from Brazil. You know, he was in Brazil for years and years as their lead point guard. He came over and he got a spot on the Lakers after going to training camp. So he's like a 26 or 27 year old rookie. He got schooled twice on ankle breakers, one by Tyler Johnson of the Heat, the white point guard with the tattoos on his arms, and then the other one of all people was Brandon Knight, and it was the same move. Marcel Huertas was going left, and the ankle breaker went right.
So are you implying that the Brazilian league isn't as good as the NBA? The talent's sort of a little different.
Well, I mean, look at Huertas and look at Prigioni. Even look at Scola after his maybe third or fourth season. What it's showing to me is if you want to go to the NBA, do what Porzingis did. Don't do what Dario Saric is doing. Don't go late. Go as soon as you can. Learn how to play in the NBA.
Well,
if you wait too long, then you're never going to get it. That's my message.
I wouldn't say that because there are times you could just go to bad situations and you could say Skudishvili and Yijin Lian and Alexei Korolev.
Even in the bad games, though, you still get the experience.
Like, Jan Vesely.
Look at Nemanja Bjelica. Like, you need that experience. You know,
but Nemanja wouldn't have got – if Nemanja came over early, he wouldn't have got it. The problem is – you need minutes, and Porzingis was able to get minutes. If you're a player and you want to come over and you're just going to sit on the bench, you're not going to, you know, it doesn't matter how you are. You're not going to get better sitting in practice and riding the bench. The problem with Darko was he couldn't get court time, and there was no D-League then to...
And to be fair, he didn't deserve the minutes. It's one of those things where Larry probably saw him in training camp, in practice, and said, he's not good enough. This was a miss.
Well, but that was just, they didn't try to develop him either. He was written off day one, and you could say he could come over, but look at, like, Mario Hezonja. He's over, but there's a logjam now due to the resurgence of Evan Fournier.
Yeah, that is true. Fournier playing well has hurt Hezonja's stock. That is true.
Jan Vesely, he came over, stunk it up, and now he's playing, he's a center now in Europe. They're sort of going to a small ball resurgence, good in EuroLeague.
Speaking to your point with the minutes being and the circumstances, Stanley Johnson's looked better. He's at 7.5 points at 3.7 rebounds, but he's only getting 20 minutes because if you've noticed, based on the stats, Stan Van Gundy relies a whole lot on his starters. You know, which is between Drummond, Reggie Jackson, who's played very well. Ilya Sova is one of the starters. Marcus Morris, I think, is the other one. And then there's I'm losing track of one more who's been starting for Detroit. But Stan Van has been just relying so much on the starters that it's just really, really hard for any of the bench guys to get any playing time. But Stanley Johnson's played well. We talked about Nemanja Bjelica. What I like about Bjelica is that he's just got a really nice all-around game. He averages 7 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 assists. He's just he kind of reminds me of Mirotić, you know?
Kind of, but he's a little more I can't even think of the word, but he's a little more, he can move a little better.
Mm-hmm. Jokic, Nikola Jokic at Denver has played decently. You know, he's kind of like Nurkic. Nurkic has had some injury trouble, so that's helped out Jokic with his minutes. Willie Cauley-Stein, he's got 5 points, 5.7 rebounds. He averages 1 block. nice, but the Kings are so wild and weird that I don't even know what those numbers mean. And then Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, 4.7 points, and he's the leader among rookies in steals. So, you know, even though Brooklyn is awful, there's at least something to look forward to in the future with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Well, that's what we're all, well, we, you know, we he was a safe pick for them because, you know, well, we need everything, but... Yeah. He's an active player.
He had a nice Vine moment, too, when he was trying to contest a Draymond Green corner three, and he wound up holding his hand when he had the follow-through. So they just got all. So they have their fingers interlocked, and they're holding each other's hand like they're at the school dance or something. It was kind of funny. If you check it out on YouTube, it's a funny little moment to watch. Did you even catch that one?
No, I missed that one, too.
You saw DeRozan's dunk on Rudy Gobert.
Well, how can you not? It just it was everywhere on Twitter.
That was fierce. That was fierce.
So what games you got coming up this holiday weekend? This four-day.
This Monday, the one that I'm sort of keeping an eye on is going to be I talked last week's episode because I had talked about some of the Monday games going into the holidays, but I talked about Oklahoma City at Utah. I don't know when Kevin Durant's coming back, but I would bet that this week would be a good time. The Knicks go to Miami and play the Heat. You know Knicks Heat. You always think about that automatically, and you think about Alonzo Mourning and Jeff Van Gundy and Pat Riley. But you know, with Porzingis mania, do you remember when Lin's sanity was riding high, and then Jeremy Lin went to Miami, and they just embarrassed him on national TV.
Yep, and then that was the end of it.
I'm not saying Miami's that kind of team because they're not. And the Knicks have already played Cleveland a time or two, but we'll see here with New York at Miami on Tuesday the 24th. Boston goes to Atlanta and plays the Celtics on TNT because they're not doing any Thursday games, so TNT is going to have the games on Tuesday. And the first one is Boston at Atlanta. What do you see there?
Who knows? The Boston team's just Atlanta probably should win that since they're at home, but it'll be a close match.
The second one on that night is the Lakers at Golden State. Any chance at all the Lakers beat the Warriors?
No, the spread must be like 30.
You think Kobe Bryant even plays? He's been sitting a lot of games due to I think they actually listed it as chronic soreness.
soreness, crankiness, whatever.
Mm-hmm. The Wednesday games, that's a loaded day, like I was saying at the top of the show. Atlanta goes to Minnesota. They had a crazy game in Atlanta a couple of weeks ago where Minnesota had a 34-point lead and almost blew it. Andrew Wiggins had a great game. Wiggins has still been playing well since then, even though Minnesota's been off and on. I'm kind of interested in seeing that. We've got Washington at Charlotte. That's kind of interesting, huh? Yeah, kind of that too. Cleveland at Toronto.
It's just, you know, you have a ton of just random mismatched games. Like, you just look at, like, they're okay.
Yeah. And then you got the Friday games. You got Cleveland at Charlotte. I mean, there's a ton here, man. They got Golden State at Phoenix. Phoenix has been very feisty at home. I wonder if they could pull a win off against the Warriors, just like everybody is. The Pistons go to Oklahoma City to play the Thunder. Andre Drummond has still been just beasting it on the rebounds, even though his double-double streak got broken.
Yeah, it did. And just the one thing I just noticed about this week's schedule is Atlanta is pretty brutal. They got two back-to-backs. They got Boston, Minnesota, as you said, then Friday, Saturday, they're at Memphis and San Antonio.
Yeah, they go to the Spurs on Saturday the 28th. That was my
game. That's a rough week.
Mm-hmm. That one's going to be a little bit tough. And then on Sunday, the 29th, as everybody gets out of the Thanksgiving vibe, the Rockets go to New York to play the Knicks. Boston is at Orlando. I'm not sure about that one. It's not really the greatest night of basketball. I've noticed that, before the ABC the ABC games start in the new year, the Sunday lineups always kind of have pretty crappy games. I'm not sure how exactly the schedule makers are able to make it happen, but it always feels like Sunday kind of has the least amount of buzz to it.
Well, because you're competing with football. So why even bother? So it's just, you know, again, it's just, we're all waiting till Christmas.
What's your favorite? What's the favorite game that you've seen this month so far? Is it one of those Golden State Warrior LA Clipper games, or is there another one that you like that you enjoyed?
I'd say Warriors Clippers thus far.
I really enjoyed that first week when the Thunder played the Magic. That was wild. That's the way NBA basketball basically should be played. Balls to the wall. But it's gonna be a fun week coming up as we get to the holidays. But it doesn't mean that the ball's not gonna be stopping anytime soon, except for Thanksgiving Day, because there's a whole lot of basketball that's left to be played. And we'll be back pretty soon to catch you up on the regular season as it all drags along. Any words before we get out of here, Adam?
Enjoy your Thanksgiving.
Are you telling me that, or are you telling the listeners that?
I was gonna say you can enjoy it, but everyone fine, they can enjoy it too.
I had to get something nice out of it. So on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew.